To my immunotherapy podcast. Today, we will be discussing the different types of immunotherapies, from checkpoint inhibitors to CAR T therapy to cancer vaccines and cytokines. I am lucky enough to be joined today by Dr. Kelly Cruzio. She received her PhD in immunology and microbiology from Georgetown University. She completed a postdoctoral fellowship in the Netherlands, where she studied coronaviruses, and also worked as a postdoctoral fellow studying epigenetics at NYU. I know her because she is faculty at the Frank H. Netter MD School of Medicine, where she is currently an assistant professor, where she teaches immunology, microbiology, hematology, and oncology. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on to my podcast. If we could just begin by kind of talking about what the tumor microenvironment is and kind of what that term means and what it consists of.
Right. So thanks for having me. When we talk about, you know, we're a tumor microenvironment, we're really talking about the space in where the tumor is living. And it not only is the tumor influenced by the space around it, but it also influences the space surrounding it. And so what we've known for fairly a long time is that the tumor does have the ability for the immune system to respond to the tumor. The thing is, the tumor is able to create an environment that shuts down the immune response. And so, again, what part of the concept of immunotherapy is trying to think about how we can take that break off the immune systems that the tumor is actually set up and activate it so that the immune system can respond once again to the tumor.
As Dr. Cruzio describes, the tumor and the surrounding microenvironment are closely related and interact constantly with each other. The tumor microenvironment is made of blood vessels, immune cells, fibroblasts, as well as signaling molecules. Some of these signaling molecules, which are proteins, are called cytokines, and Dr. Cruzio will be describing how tumors can secrete these signaling molecules, or cytokines, to suppress the immune response.
And we kind of talked a little bit about it in the last podcast about how tumors can upregulate the PD-L1 expression, and then that there are drugs that can kind of target that PD-L1 to turn off that immune dampening. Can you just talk about maybe some of the other ways that the immune system can kind of get turned down in that area around the tumor?
Yeah, so the tumor could do a couple of things. One, it can release a set of chemicals we call cytokines. And cytokines can be both immune activating and immune suppressing. Tumors, or what we would say maybe more successful tumors or aggressive cancers, tend to create or secrete these cytokines and chemicals that will dampen the immune system. So that's one way that they set up this environment around them that protects them from the immune response. Another thing that happens as the tumor grows is that if there was an immune response to a portion of that tumor, the immune system would actually attack it, actually clearing that piece of that cancer, but then also losing whatever specific marker that tumor was expressing that made the immune system recognize it. And so, in other words, what happens over time is a process we call immune editing, where the tumor will actually downregulate expression profiles that make it immunogenic. And so we're losing that foreignness of the tumor because the immune system responded to it. And so, and the immune tumor is evolving over time. And so it will evolve away from something that makes it really able to be detected by the immune system.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, because I think, and this is important, and something that I try to, when I'm explaining this to folks, is that what people seem really universally understand about cancer is that often it's due to a mutation of some sort. Mm-hmm. And what our immune system is recognizing, you know, just a basic tenet, a basic principle of the immune system is that your immune system recognizes something that is foreign to your human body, right? To something is foreign to the organism, something that's foreign to the immune system. So the immune system wouldn't recognize something that's healthy and normal within the body. It wouldn't attack that. But when cancer develops, it actually is expressing a bunch of mutated proteins, a bunch of abnormal foreign proteins are now existing inside that human body. And that allows the immune system to say, hey, you know, something's not right here. Let me clear it. And so there is this yin yang with the immune system and cancer. And what happens though, you know, when a cancer is highly aggressive, is rapidly proliferating, you know, a couple of things. One, the immune system sometimes might not be able to keep up because the cancer is proliferating so rapidly. But two, the cancer is then also secreting and creating this immunosuppressive environment and is saying, okay, you know, immune system, don't attack us, you know, turn yourself off. And then the other third thing is that it's evolving, you know, and it's constantly mutating and, you know, it's downregulating those foreign antigens, right? Those foreign proteins that are expressed on that tumor that makes it, or on that cancer that makes it immunorecognizable or immunogenic to begin with.
To recap what Dr. Cruzio is stating, a tumor is a mixture of heterogeneous cells. Different cells of the tumor are expressing different foreign markers that the immune system can recognize. Once the immune system recognizes a certain marker and clears all cells expressing that marker, the remaining tumor is no longer recognizable to the immune system.
Okay, so I guess the first kind of class of immunotherapies that I wanted to talk about were the, you know, PD-L1, the checkpoint inhibitors. Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about the mechanism of the PD-L1s already, but can you kind of talk about maybe the differences between PD-L1 inhibitors and CTLA-4 inhibitors and just kind of a broad view of how you see how they work?
Sure. So we know about these, what we call checkpoint inhibitors, both PD-L1s as well as CTLA-4 are both considered checkpoint inhibitors. And they occur normally. Those receptors and ligands get expressed normally in a normal immune response to shut down the immune response. So your immune system can't constantly be activated, right? When your immune system is responding to something foreign, you know, an infection of some sort, it clears that infection. And then you need that immune response to be shut down. And so normally this can happen through the expression of PD-1 ligand. And it also can happen when that immune response is first getting activated. And that is with the interaction of CTLA-4 and the T cells at the lymph node. And so there's two points really so that we can have this shutdown. We can have the shutdown here. I should back up a little bit, right? So when your T cells are first being activated to go after something foreign, they're going to see that at the lymph node, and that, you know, so that foreign particle, that foreign antigen, we say, is brought to the lymph node. T cells are coming in and out of the lymph node, really scanning for anything foreign. Mm-hmm. And then they're activated at the lymph node when they find something presented to them as foreign through what we call an antigen presenting cell. So right there, they're activated and they make a response. Then they go to that site where they're that is in that infection, and that they respond to that foreign antigen that they see at that site of infection. So in both cases, those are places where the T cells initially activated in the lymph node, and then where they are going to go do their job to clear that infection at that site of infection. And in both places, we have the ability to kind of shut that response down. One at the lymph node through CTLA-4 interaction from the antigen presenting cell with this T cell, and at the site where that T cell is responding, which is, you know, the PD-L1 and PD ligand, where they're going to interact with each other there. So what we know in cancer is that, you know, those cancerous cells and trying to create this immune suppressive environment are going to upregulate these PD-1 ligands. And that is going to shut down any T cells that may come into that area and say, oh, you know, look at this cancerous cell. It's expressing these mutated proteins. I mean, it's foreign. We're going to have to shut it down. And so, so that's one way that cancer is trying to avoid the immune response by turning on brakes that we typically use to shut down the immune response. So that's one way.
And the cancer is able to do this just kind of through random mutations. How does it develop that knowledge, I guess?
So we know that some of that has to do with the cytokines that these cancers then evolve to express. And so some of these chemicals in that environment will actually upregulate PD-1 ligand on those cells. But again, also mutations. So you're going to have very aggressive cancers that will upregulate overexpression of PD-1 ligand pretty fairly early. Mm-hmm. And that will help also mitigate that response.
The three points that Dr. Cruzio is making is, one, sometimes the cancer is growing so rapidly that the immune system can't keep up. Two, the cancer itself is able to turn off the surrounding immune system. And three, the cancer is mutating and evolving to avoid recognition by the immune system.
So the next thing that I wanted to talk about was this term of T cell transfer or adoptive T cell transfer. And can you just explain like how do they get T cells from your body? What are they doing to the T cells when they're outside of your body? And then what's the theory behind it?
Right. So when we talk about adoptive T cell therapy, one piece of that is CAR T, or chimeric antigen receptor T cells. So CAR T therapy has really been a game changer in certain types of cancers. And the concept of that is, we've talked about these T cells coming in and recognizing the cancer and attacking it. The thing is, in order for those T cells to be activated against something foreign, it first needs to be presented to them at the lymph node, like we were talking about, by a group of cells called, you know, antigen presenting cells. So these group of cells present foreign things to our T cells, but our T cells can only see those foreign things through a certain receptor. Okay, so what we say that, you know, T cells are restricted by what they can see through the receptors that they're expressing and the receptors that the antigen presenting cells or those presenting cells are showing them to them. T cells can't see, we say, anything just floating around in the body as foreign. It really needs to be first presented on a specific receptor, and its receptor needs to recognize it as foreign. Okay. And that's different than this concept of antibodies, right? Everyone's heard a lot about antibodies over the course of the year with COVID, right? Antibodies are created. They're molecules. Everyone knows they kind of look like Y-shaped molecules. And those molecules in and of themselves can recognize something foreign. Now, the concept of CAR T therapy is saying maybe we can take all the activity of a T cell to kill a cancerous cell, but giving it its ability to recognize something foreign by giving it the antibody attached to the T cell. So what I'm trying to say here is, let's take away that T cell's restriction of having to see something foreign through the presentation of another cell. So the concept, right, of CAR T therapy is really the T cells we know can be activated and they can kill cancerous cells, but they need to be able to first be activated by the presentation of something foreign in what we say the context of a receptor. And the concept with CAR T was, let's just take all that activity of that T cell, but take away its having to rely on first being presented that foreign antigen by that antigen presenting cell. And the way they do that is by giving that T cell a receptor that is really an antibody bound to a stem that will activate the T cell. Basically, we're taking that ability of a T cell to kill something and we're sticking on a receptor that makes it see your cancer and it not have to have it rely on other kinds of steps for it to get primed and activated. That's basically what it is. So what we do to do that, we're going to take out their T cells, not all of their T cells. We take out, you know, their T cells. We will sort them through a machine that can sort out your T cells. We're going to plate them in culture. And then we use a method that allows this new receptor that's going to recognize their cancer be put onto that T cell. And in the simplest way. Now, the way we do this, and this sounds a little scary to some folks too, is that we actually use retroviruses and lentiviruses that are going to then integrate into that cell so that those T cells are always going to express that receptor that recognizes their cancer.
Okay. So T cells are taken out of the body through your blood. Mm-hmm. And they're sorted through a machine in the lab. And then in the lab, you can introduce a virus to those T cells, which basically just puts the correct like DNA for making that receptor into the T cell. Then that T cell is expressing the receptor that's going to be able to recognize your cancer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, you know, bringing that, that's going to activate the T cell to kill your cancer cell.
Right. And again, we use viruses because it's really hard to get DNA into our human cells. But viruses, you know, because of definition of what viruses do, they jump into your cells and they spit out nucleic acid, right? So we use viruses because that's easier to get this receptor into the cells and they'll permanently express that receptor and that's it. They won't be making viruses and having those viruses infect other cells. It's just those cells are, that virus is used just to get that nucleic acid into that, you know, to get that DNA into that cell so that those T cells now express a receptor that can recognize your cancer. And once they do, once they find that cancer, they don't need any other help from antigen presenting cells. They will just automatically kill that cancer when they recognize it. And that's that chimeric aspect of it. It has the activation domain of a T cell, but it has the receptor domain of an antibody. So there's a number of CAR T therapies that are available right now, but they've been successfully used in particular when we're looking at lymphomas and leukemias. The receptors that have been put in have been, you know, against markers that we find in these blood cancers.
So I guess the next immunotherapy topic that I wanted to talk about were cancer vaccines. And so in school, we're taught about vaccines to prevent cancer, like the HPV vaccine, which keeps you from getting a virus that then might give you cancer down the road. Right. But more specifically, just wanting to talk about cancer vaccines as kind of vaccines that are able to target a cancer. So can you just talk about what that means?
Yeah. So I get, you know, a lot of these come from the perspective of how do we promote an immune response to our cancer, right? So I've said that, you know, immune system can try to avoid the immune response by, you know, changing its environment and making it a more immune suppressive environment. And so we try to do things to promote a robust immune response. And actually the more foreign that cancer looks, the better chance of an immune response, and then the better chance of a recovery. So cancer vaccines are really trying to identify something that's really unique to the cancer, and then using whatever that really unique component that you found in the cancer, using that to promote an immune response in a typical fashion that we hear about it with vaccines, by, you know, injecting it back into the patient and promoting, usually along with other factors that will then promote a robust immune response and then help the immune system to go after that cancer.
The last topic or field that I wanted to discuss were these, I guess they're kind of not being used as much anymore, but the cytokines. So introducing IL-2 into the cancer or the tumor microenvironment. Can you kind of talk about how those work?
So, I mean, historically, we have these different milestones that occurred where we were getting clues that the immune system can respond to cancer. To be honest, it was a bit of a debate in the world about whether or not the immune system would ever be able to respond to cancer. You could look at these historical precedents, you know, back as far as William Coley. I don't know if you've read some of them. So there, you know, he was actually injecting bacteria. He wasn't even sure which at the time, into the sites where patients had sarcomas. And then in some patients, again, not all, but in some patients, he did see a reduction in the tumor, and sometimes they were healed completely. Some people didn't survive the treatment because they got so sick from the cocktail of microbes that he was injecting into them. And in some people, it failed. But there was this initial thought that, you know, the immune system can play a role. What they also knew was when we looked at patients who, if you were looking at a biopsy of tumors, you could see that patients who had cells that we knew were CD8 positive T cells or these kinds of T cells that would come in and try to respond to foreign particles, right? If you looked at patients who had those in their environment versus those who didn't have any, the ones who had a large percent or had some in there and at their tumor during the biopsy actually had a better prognosis. So another thing that we kind of say, okay, the immune system is doing something. So there was some early work where they were using IL-2 to try to, because we know IL-2 is a cytokine, one of those cytokines, one of these chemical modulators of the immune system that is really important for the proliferation of lymphocytes. So the thought there was that, you know, if we can get these cells, these immune cells to proliferate at the site of the cancer is, maybe we can have a better outcome. You know, these cancer cells can then get destroyed by the immune system that we're giving them basically growth factor at the site of the tumor. So that was some of that initial work where they tried to use IL-2 as a known growth factor for immune cells to try to stimulate their proliferation and their growth at the site of a cancer and hope that that would stimulate a reduction in the cancer.
And then I was also reading about BCG therapy for prostate cancer or for bladder cancer.
Bladder cancer. Yes. Yeah. And that's still something that they use.
Before Dr. Cruzio explains BCG, I wanted to give a little background. BCG is a bacteria that is introduced into the bladder in a patient who has bladder cancer in the hopes that it'll cause an inflammatory reaction.
Still something that they use still active. So again, they're actually flushing out in the bladder. They'll allow the BCG to get into the bladder. And again, the really basic level of thought is having that presence of those microbes there are going to stimulate an immune response. And then in doing so, right, you expose the immune system as it's responding to the microbe, expose the immune system to those cancerous cells that are in the area I'm getting too technical. I think we should cut all this. Yeah. But what happens is the immune system cells are in the area, and in trying to clear those microbes, they're also exposed to those foreign antigens of the bladder cancer, and that helps them to build a response there. It's the very simplest.
I lastly wanted to ask Dr. Cruzio what she felt like the role of immunotherapies would be in the future of cancer treatment.
How did I say it? I think immunotherapy were kind of considered, oh, it's kind of novel. You know, I don't know if it's really doing anything. And maybe it puts the lid on cancer after we've hit it really hard with chemotherapy. But I think what we can see now and more in the data is that it's really something that we can use in concert with, you know, chemotherapy. And if we can back off a little bit of the traditional chemotherapy, use it, but also use in conjunction with the immunotherapy. I think right now it's been a real helpful piece in the toolkit, but I think it's not all or nothing with both immunotherapy and traditional chemotherapeutics, as you know. I think what we're going to see over time is that they each have their role. And I think in concert, they're probably going to be really useful and increasingly useful as we go forward.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a bigger therapeutic window now, I think, by adding the immune system as part of the plan, and not exclusively we're going to have the immune system alone tackle this, and not exclusively we're going to have the traditional chemotherapy alone do it.
That's great. Well, that was a super helpful conversation. Thank you so much, Dr. Cruzio.
Thank you so much for listening to that episode with Dr. Cruzio. I hope you were able to learn something and enjoyed the conversation. Make sure to listen to our next episode, where I will be interviewing a patient who is on immunotherapies, and we'll get into a deeper discussion about the adverse events and side effects that come with taking cancer immunotherapies. Thanks so much.